Many of us have projects that we, you know, do every year. And lucky for us, Dennis Prusik has a project that he's done every year for 35 years that is one that we can all appreciate. It's his Phenology calendar. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. And Dennis has published the Wisconsin Nature Calendar once again. The 35 years he's been doing it. And you know what? There has been some wonderful conservation projects that have received funding as a result of it. But this is now the final year that he will be taking on the project. He's with us today. And Dennis, great to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's great to be back.
35 years. Do you ever think it was going to, you were going to be doing this for 35 years?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, good.
My plan was to do it the rest of my life. My goal was I wanted to do 50 of them.
Wow.
And, well, you know, my ran into some health problems, and so, you know, all of a sudden I realized how big a project it was and how demanding it was, and all the time I enjoyed it, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, all things must come to an end, and
sure.
35 years is a great ride. And, you know, even though you've been doing this for 35 years and you've been on the air with me for many years, I'm sure there are still people out there who say, what the heck's phenology? You've got a phenology calendar. What is phenology? Maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah. Phenology is a science. It's the study of how plants and animals have their life cycle intimately shaped by the pattern of seasonal weather in a given area. So it matters where you live on the earth. And in this case, my study is Wisconsin and the UP with an emphasis on the northern half of the state.
Yeah. What does it tell us? What does the study tell us?
Well, you know, phenology is a very unique science. It's very unlike mathematics or some of the harder sciences. This is a science in which you have to observe lots of details of lots of many different things. And then you kind of have to put it all together and see what puzzles you're finding and what kind of picture emerges. Essentially, what a lot of amateur studies do is they'll study one thing like returning robins or certain plants, when do they bloom, that sort of thing. And after a while, they kind of run out because they're not also studying the weather pattern. And that's what my study has done, is it's studied not only what are all plants and animals doing, but it's studied the pattern of weather and the elements of weather. You're talking sunlight, you're talking temperature, precipitation, wind, barometric pressure, those sorts of things. And so in my study, what I've learned is that together all these things kind of mishmash into things that are kind of hard to understand. But once you start pulling the elements apart and you look at just sunlight and you look at just temperature and just precipitation, all of a sudden you're seeing what plants and animals are responding to.
Yeah. And this study of phenology, it's been around for a long time, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's older than dirt. And that's basically what it used to study. It was our forefathers did it because they had to live off the land. And especially if you lived in the northern parts, like where in Wisconsin, and where you have winters that get cold. And they were trying to figure out how could they get their plants in the earliest, that was still the safest, get the most out of those plants before the killing frost would take them.
Yeah, and so that's how it got started, and there are lots of sayings that go along with it, depending on where you live.
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely.
When something blooms or, you know, there are a whole, I don't even want to get started on it, but there are a whole lot of things that, you know, really kind of result from phenology study.
Well, yes. I mean, I'll just give you an example. One of the first things the Europeans learned when they came over was from the natives here that you planted corn when the oak leaves were the size of a squirrel's ear. And essentially what they had figured out was that when it comes to plant in the growing season, if you live where it freezes, and of course we qualify here in Wisconsin.
Yes, we do.
temperature is king in defining what plants and animals do and when they do it. That's what you have to pay attention to. So when you think of plants as being thermometers with the roots in the soil reading the temperature, as the soil warms, the oak trees will trigger off, send out the new leaf. When it's the size of a squirrel's ear, that means the soil's warm enough to go out and plant corn or any other warm weather crop. And my study has found that also to be true. The thing that I follow at roughly about the same time is the lilac bush blooming, which happens about the same time that oak leaves are the size of a squirrel's ear.
Dennis Prusik, our guest today, he has published the Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin for 35 years. This is the final year that he's taking on the project, and it was great to have him with us today. You may have used his calendar, or maybe you've used other calendars, or maybe you've never heard of phenology before. What do you think is most interesting about it? Do you pay attention to and take notes of the cycles of nature around you? Or maybe you've worked with Dennis. Dennis has a great list of people who have helped him over the years. Antigo Dave comes immediately to my mind, or Paul Hartman, or Kathy from Superior. Those are some names that I think about right off the bat when I think about his calendar. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email, go on my Facebook page. Any of those, we'd love to hear from you. How you got started on this calendar is kind of intriguing to me. Talk about how that happened.
Well, it started when I was in college, had an English class, and we were required to keep a journal and then write a story based on that. And that, boy, I found the magic of keeping a journal. And it's really one of the fundamental aspects of phenology is that you get outside every day and you witness what's going on. And then you keep a journal about it, because the journal really does what our minds does not do, which is our minds, we tend to remember certain things, we distort other things, and over time, we just forget. And you keep a journal, and it allows you then, over many years, to start going back, and you can read in a few minutes then what it's taken you years to see and observe and put down. And that acts like kind of a telescope.
Yeah,
it gives you a way of seeing things that you wouldn't otherwise see.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking about our deer hunting crew that's been together for so many years, and one of the guys has kept a calendar of the weather, the temperatures, the deer shot, when they were, and so forth. And it's really a lot of fun to look back, years ago or whatever. And is there less snow now, or are there more snow now than there was 20, you know, that sort of thing? It's just a lot of fun to look at.
Well, and the modern-day phenologist really is the sportsman, particularly a lot of fishermen, will keep a journal, and they'll keep record of all the elements, sunrise, sunset, temperature, wind direction, how strong the wind was, barometric pressure changes, all those things. And they'll keep note of that, and they'll keep a journal of their fishing success, and then they'll pore over them and then figure out, well, you know, I see a pattern here. I wonder if this holds. And so then when they go fishing, all of a sudden they're seeing the world differently, and they're starting to learn from their own experience. And that's pretty much how my whole project has been for 35 years, is you go out and pay attention, and you write it down, and you try and learn from it.
Tim in Sun Prairie is up here with a question for you. Hi, Tim. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I had a question about, it's funny you're mentioning fish. I look at phenology of fish, too, and specifically out of the Northwest and north central parts of the state, specifically sucker, and just changes in their migration patterns and and temporal changes in and when they spawn. And I was wondering if you looked at any other animals and how maybe they've changed in the past 30 years.
In terms of...
like the timing of their migrations or the timing of their spawnings.
Or their reproduction. Okay. Yeah. Dennis?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have. Indeed. One of the things I follow, and I try and follow everything, of course, you know, you don't always collect enough data to start getting patterns, but after a while... you can, and one of the things that I've noticed, especially in my part of the state with the Wolf River, is the spawning run of the walleye, then the white bass, and in between that, the sturgeon spawn. And yes, it's just really interesting to see how connected they are to temperature. And in the last 2 years, we have great example of how temperature, they are so temperature sensitive to this. Two springs ago, we had a dramatic shift. If you define the seasons by temperature, and I do, I define winter as when you have a majority of average day or majority of days averaging 32 degrees or colder. And when that shifts to where you get a majority of days with the average temperature above that, that'll trigger spawning, and it happens so fast and so quickly. Two springs ago, in the spring of 2012, that all three species went up the Wolf at the same time and completely befuddled everybody. Fishermen just didn't have any idea of what was going on and when it was going on because everything warmed up so fast it sent them all up at once. And then what happened is when we had a little cool spell, they all went down together. Mm-hmm. And so it, what we had, for example, the sturgeon spawn was 6 weeks and 4 weeks ahead of normal of where I was observing. In 2012, compared to this last spring, where the temperature changed, that seasonal conversion changed so much later than normal, the sturgeon run was, depending where you're measuring it now, was anywhere from a half a week to a week and a half later than normal.
Huh?
So between the 2 years, you're almost talking as much as 2 months change.
Wow.
When that spawning run happened.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Tim, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your question.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Robert and Nina, your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. I'm just noticing. I gave up my car back in 2007, and I've been riding a bike 12 months of the year ever since. Yeah. So I kind of notice things that are going on. I'm a birder anyway, but this year, for some reason, despite all the snow and the cold weather, there are in the Nina area anyway. There seems to be a lot more robins around.
Hmm.
I'm just wondering, that's kind of strange, considering the weather anyway.
Yeah. Well, here's what I've kind of gleaned, and it gets really complicated here. But what I've gleaned from watching bird migrations, especially when you're talking about the fall to winter change, there's a lot of factors that seem to be at play. And one of them is that birds... I suppose, like a lot of animals, are always pushing the envelope of where they can stay and how long they can hang on. So when you take bird species like robin have a tremendous numbers in their population. And so just like humans, they're all different kinds that are more aggressive and will stay longer and those that leave earlier. And, you know, and what happens is that over time, there can be a real shift in when robins as a whole will do something like a fall migration, and they won't do it all at once. And what I've noticed is that the main migration occurs when we get a deep enough snow cover, and it really seems to push the majority of robins southward. But what I've also noticed is two other factors, and one of them is that the number of robins that are staying in our cities, in our urban areas, which, by the way, are growing, and providing all sorts of microclimates, the number of robins that are staying over winter seems to definitely be on the increase. So not all robins are migrating out of our state every winter. And then the other thing that I've noticed is that birds seem to have kind of like an interior clock, so that they remember last year, and if last year was a little bit warmer, they hang around, and when that snowfall comes or when that cold temperatures come, they just won't leave because they remembered last year that they could stay longer. And there seems to be this phenomena of them sometimes just not believing the change in weather when it happens, and so they stay around until finally it may take the second snowstorm to start to drive them out. And this year we've especially had an early cold spell. The changeover for fall into winter occurred right at the end of November, right at the beginning of December, depending where you were in the state. And we got a lot of snow. But they're not believing it. They're waiting for the second or third snowstorm before the majority are going to leave. And then there's those robins that just have decided they like Wisconsin all winter long.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you very much for calling, Robert. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Dennis Prusik, who has published the Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin for 35 years, the final year that he'll be taking on this project. And we'll tell you how, certainly want your input, your questions and comments, and we'll also be letting you know how you can get a copy of this last Wisconsin Nature Calendar. I'm Larry Mueller. Marika Suval, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're visiting with Dennis Prusik, who has published the Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin. It's his last year. He's done it for 35 years. Phenology calendar, and it's a wonderful resource, I can tell you that for sure. Hope that you will join in with your own questions or comments, or maybe your own experiences with Dennis's calendar, or with your own and your own experiences. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's turn to Derek next from Pulaski. Derek? Hi, thanks for waiting.
I had a question regarding morels.
Okay.
I'm kind of a beginner hunter, haven't really got into it yet, hoping to start this next season. But I was just wondering if Dennis could tell me what to look for, I guess. When would be a good time to get out and start looking, and maybe even where some good places are to look. And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right.
Well, I can tell you I'm definitely not an expert on mushrooms. I'm trying to remember exactly when that turnover takes place. And I'm going by memory here right now because I used to get more reports about morel picking. And I believe the event that it coincided with was this same lilac time when the lilac bush blooms, or when the oak tree has its leaves the size of squirrels' ears. I believe that was the time. I'm pulling it out of my memory now.
Yeah, I think you're
right. That's the time of year that you look. Other than that, I don't know much about morels as far as habitat and what to look for. I know there's quite a few good books out on about Wisconsin wild edibles. That would probably give you a lot better information.
There you go. And, of course, dead elm trees were always the favorite spot, but we've lost most of our elms, so they're not out there anymore. But there are other places, and I think, rather than us to speculate, we'll send you to some of the books that are out there, or even some of the online sources on morel mushrooms. Ed in Reno, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Ed.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me on the show here, and my compliments to your show and to your guest. I just wanted to, say how much I appreciate the nature of his effort, if you pardon the double entendre there, but, and how important it is, for us to monitor nature. And this is one of the ways that we take a a real close look at specific things and begin to see patterns that I think will be immensely valuable to the future. So my compliments and my commendations to your guest there on his effort. And I'm sorry if he didn't make it to his 50 years, but 35 years is quite an achievement.
Yeah, yeah. I think so as well. Dennis, a comment?
I believe as he does. It's important to pay attention to the world you live in. And it's one of the premises of phonology is that if you pay attention to the details over a long enough period of time, and I've always referred to it as looking small enough, long enough, that's when you really start to learn things.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks again, Ed. Let's talk more about some of the specifics of the calendar. What kinds of events are listed on the calendar, Dennis?
Well, the calendar has many parts to it. It's kind of like three, maybe even four calendars in one.
Yeah.
It has a diary part of it, which is kind of last year's calendar, last year's happenings on the date they happened along. And this is what's featured in the top half. And so you read the diary, and what it'll tell you is specific plant or animal events and what they were related to, what aspect of weather, whether it's sunlight or temperature or rain or precipitation. And so these are little kind of little bit of learning things. If you pay attention to that, you can kind of go, So if I looked under similar conditions in this coming year, I might expect to find the same thing. And it's entertainment. It's people love doing this. It's you know, like you went to somebody's cottage and found their own diary there, and where they wrote what they did last year. You know, and these were extremely active people, and I have an observer network of dozens of people who get out and they either fish or they hunt or they go pick wild edibles they like to look for wildflowers, or they're birders, or these people are interested in insects, and all of them have this natural love of nature and an understanding that weather plays a big role in what nature does and when it does it. And that's the one calendar, and then the bottom half is the traditional Roman calendar. That's the one with the 365 days and the 12 months. And with it is an almanac of information, sunrise and sunset on each date, and normal high and normal low temperatures, and record high and record low temperatures for each date. And this is from Green Bay, which I consider my phenology center of my study area. Mm-hmm. And then with that is an active phonology calendar. If you think of the traditional calendar, it's easy to predict when the 1st of January is every year because it comes on the same time.
Yep.
These are always the same, but when you're trying to figure out when nature's going to do things, you've actively have to pay attention to how the transition from winter to spring happens. And so I have 23 events to look at that you must actively look at to more or less ride that wave of temperature change as it comes to us uniquely every year. And if you pay attention to it and you kind of ride that wave, what's nice about it is, for example, if you're watching for when the permanent snow cover is removed and you have to be looking in large open areas like farmland or maybe a big open lot in the city, when that's 90% or more removed as snow, that's when you look for the robins and the red-winged blackbirds to move into the state in your area. And then you also know that you're about 2 weeks on average away from when the frost comes out of the ground, which is the traditional phenology of beginning of spring, because that's the beginning of the growing season.
Yeah. And you did say that Green Bay is the phenological center for Wisconsin. Why is that? Just because of its location?
Well, first of all, it's because I live there.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So I started with that, but then I was thinking, should I change it? You know, should I go somewhere else to better reflect? And actually, you know, it's good north and south. You'd think like Wausau would be better, though, for east and west, but as it turns out, what it's good for is it's also good for, we have Lake Michigan, which is this huge body of water, which really changes our seasonal weather patterns dramatic for those people who live along its shores. So if you live in Milwaukee, if you live in Manitowoc, if you live in Green Bay, there's a lot of places. They're dramatically different because of Lake Michigan. So it kind of works good because it's in a ways, and it's really on the Bay of Green Bay. It's kind of halfway between Lake Michigan, you might say, and the Mississippi River. Is kind of an east to west sort of influence by that giant body of water.
Mm. And you do provide in your map. You've got some adjustments for regions of the state.
Yes. Yeah. But what I do is for those people, and there are a lot of them that who really would like to get a more closer idea of what it would be like where they lived. You know, and these are all guideposts because, of course, every year temperatures change, and you're just kind of looking and saying, okay, here's the average for that date. That's a good guide. Are we above or are we below average? But if you want to get it more specifically narrowed, I do have adjustments that run along the top of this bottom half of the calendar. And what they do, for instance, if you're in Milwaukee, you would add 5 minutes for sunrise and subtract 5 minutes for sunset if you're in the month of June and you lived in Milwaukee as compared to Green Bay. And then you would add 2 degrees to the temperatures that are there for the averages and the records.
Mm. Have Scott from... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and there's for other parts of the state too, Door County, Hayward, Milwaukee, yep. Minocqua, Eagle River, and then even for Chicago, because I get a lot of people from northern Illinois that love the calendar because I think a lot of people there own property in northern Wisconsin.
Sure, absolutely. Scott in Watertown has a question. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I am wondering if your guest has any experience or noticed any correlation between moon phases, rising and setting times of the moon, or just the cycle of the moon being a dark moon or full moon on any of the events as far as migrations or timing of birds and animals and mm-hmm. fish.
Sure. Thank you for calling.
Well, here's what I've noticed. In Wisconsin, not so much on a seasonal scale do we have migrations and those things affected by the phases of the moon. It definitely seems to be all temperature, not completely temperature, but I mean that's the dominant influence is temperature. But what I've also noticed is that when I've said, well, why is you know things so differently in Wisconsin than everywhere else? If you go to where it doesn't freeze, there not only is nature. Animals, now we're talking, much more tuned in to sunlight. They're much more tuned in to moon and full moon and phases like that. And so a lot of spawning or birthing or whatever will take place in those places that don't freeze, very much a combination of sunlight and the phases of the moon. But once you get up to Wisconsin, where it freezes so long and so hard, and it shapes everything, you can have birds, for instance, that'll start out in the neotropical areas of the world, and they'll start pretty much on the same time based on sunlight. But as they get near Wisconsin, they think better of it. because if they run into cold weather, they just kind of stop and hang around and then move in when it warms up. And so there, I've found that what I've noticed for bird migrations especially is those birds that don't go very far south, like the robins and the redwings, you know, they're just south of us over winter. And, boy, they can't wait for that snow cover to go, and they're here. But the neotropicals, which head much further south, they come later. So normally, most years, they can do it on sunlight. So you've got the first birds coming. They're doing it mainly by temperature. You've got the later birds coming. They're much more influenced by sunlight. And as far as the phases of the moon, those have less to do with, like, migration and spawning, but can have a lot to do with, like, seeding patterns of fish and stuff like that. There seems to be some connection there between, like, if you're in the middle of summer, a full moon and the phases of the moon and where the moon is in relationship to the horizon. That can have an influence on, say, fish bite once you're into the middle of summer and even in the middle of winter. But as far as migration goes, I haven't seen the connection there. That is a very strong one.
I wonder, in your decades of tracking phenology, changes and trends that you have noticed are particularly of interest to you personally?
Well, yeah. To me personally, because I still have got a cottage where I grew up as a boy. And so that's right on the water. And the one thing I have noticed is, to me, kind of a disturbing trend that is kind of under the radar. When I think of the 35-year trend of insect life on water, it seems to be on a downward decline. When I think of in terms of amphibian life, snakes, toads, and turtles even, that is definitely on a decline. When I think in terms of birds that feed near the water, like purple martins and tree swallows. Tree swallows kind of dramatically lately have shown a really downward decline. And it makes me think, and of course, you know, this is not a hard science. This is kind of a part of phenology is you make an educated guess and then you watch it after a while to see if that's indeed what happens. But I just have this feeling there's something happening with the water quality we don't have on our radar. Some sort of small amounts of chemicals or what have you that are just affecting, they're kind of rippling through the insect line to the bird line to the amphibian line. And so that kind of has me worried because, as far as I know, it's not on anybody's radar. The DNR doesn't talk about it, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to be studying it, but it's something I've noticed and it's something that does concern me.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got this wonderful calendar, and I know that you're going to get a lot of orders for it. Here's your last year, but tell people how they can get copies of your calendar, the 2014 Wisconsin Nature Calendar.
Yes, they are $10 each. And there's $2 for shipping, regardless of how many they order. So if they order three of them, it's $32. And they can make the check out to Dennis Prusik. And my last name is Prusik. And send it to 1701 9th Street. That's Green Bay. And the zip is 54304. And I'll send them out a calendar the day I receive the order.
Oh, 1701 9th Street, Green Bay, Wisconsin, 54304. And we'll post that up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well. I think we might already have it up there. We probably do. We'll check it. Marika's going to check it for us. And we'll get it up there if it's not there already. Dennis, and you know, the other thing I wanted to mention, your calendar has provided funding for a lot of conservation projects over the decades. I imagine you've got to be really proud of that.
Yes, it's important to a lot of the people because I got an awful lot of help starting this calendar by the Northeastern Wisconsin Audubon Society. And part of what they allowed the project to do was to set up an endowment to put money in every year. And also it fundraises from other people who think it's a good idea and just make donations. And from that now, we make grants every year to mainly the over 50 land trusts that are in the state of Wisconsin. And the land trusts are doing this fantastic work of saving the disappearing wild places that are still remain in the state. And it's really nice to they allow us to give them some money every year to help them with their work.
Yeah. Well, this has just been wonderful, a wonderful thing that you've done for all of these years, and you've what a legacy. I want to mention that on our Facebook page, we do have a link from the through the Audubon Society to your calendar, so that's up there, Dennis. And you certainly have our thanks for the wonderful work that you've done over the years, and certainly you have the thanks of I think everybody, certainly everybody in Wisconsin and elsewhere who has received your calendar, and those who have not but still recognize the importance of this work. So my great thanks to you, Dennis, and I wish you all the best, and I hope you I'm hoping that you sell every single calendar.
And thank you, Larry, for the kind words. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, he's a great guy, Dennis Prusik, and he's done some marvelous work. And I hope you'll take a look at that Wisconsin Nature Calendar for 2014. It's the 2014 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for home and cabin, $10 a copy on it. You're going to enjoy it, and I particularly enjoy the top half of the calendar, all the great comments from all the wonderful people who have helped Dennis over the years. It's just been a certainly a labor of love for him, and probably for all those folks who helped him out over the years. And again, you can 1701 9th Street, Green Bay, 54304, or just go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show, and you can learn how to get a copy of that phenology calendar and help out the Wisconsin Land Trust. It's certainly a very worthwhile organization.